Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. In this episode, I talk with Peter Lebedevs. Peter is a tennis coach and the tournament director for the Dallas Open. Now, the Dallas Open is coming up February 4th through 12th in its second year in Dallas. It moved from New York. And we talk a little bit about the tournament, what's going to be different this year. You'll get a little bit of kind of what goes on behind the scenes for running an ATP 250 tennis tournament. But like I said, Peter's also a very good coach. He actually coaches the number 73 doubles player in the world on the WTA Tour, Catherine Harrison. So I asked him a little bit about what her offseason looked like, what she is better at now than she was a couple years ago, what she's still working on, and then advice for her for the Australian Open, where she drew the number one seeded Czechs in the first round. So she had a very tough first round matchup. But now that I'm recording this intro, she finished that and actually did win a set off of the number one team in the world. So they lost in a third. It was a very tight match. But anyways, we do talk a little bit of strategy in this episode as well. So enjoy this conversation with Peter Lebedevs. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Today we have Peter Lebedevs on. Peter is the tournament director for the Dallas Open. We had him on last year, and now it is year two for the Dallas Open. Peter, welcome back.
Thanks, appreciate it. Glad to be back.
So we've got your tournament coming up here in about 2 or 3 weeks now, February 4th through 12th. Tickets are on sale at dallasopen.com. And you've got quite the lineup this year. It seems like every single top American player is going to be playing in this. We've got Fritz, Tiafoe, Opelka, Isner, Nakashima, and the list goes on. Tell us what to expect this year from the Dallas Open. Go ahead and sell it a little bit to us.
Look, it's going to be, as you say, it's going to be a great field of a lot of Americans, as well as Miomir Kecmanovic from Serbia. He's coming in as a 28th ranked player in the world. There is one other player that's been asking me to hold a wild card that would probably come in there above all except Taylor in there. So we're hoping we get them. But, you know, you've got Taylor Fritz, the top tenner, who qualified for Turin, the Tour Finals, being there. Francis, it'll be Francis's first time back to Dallas. And that's what we're always trying to do, is find new names for people to see and new players to come out. So obviously, Francis and Miomir are two of the top guys. But then we've also got, as you said, all the top Americans coming in. Mackenzie McDonald this year is back. He missed out last year, but he's back this year. And then you add in JJ Wolf, who's had a heck of a year and had another good win at the Aussie. Yep. And also the current NCAA champion from Florida, Ben Shelton, is coming in. So I think we've got a really strong field with some new names for people to see and get excited about watching.
Yeah. And there's also a kind of exhibition match the week before with somebody I've heard of named Venus Williams. Tell us about that.
Exactly. Look, after the event, we spoke to a lot of our fans, and they said, what would you like to see? And they, you know, their comment was, we'd like to see some of the ladies out there some. So I said, okay, let's try and create a women's tennis classic. And so we've been working to get all the players out there, and we solidified Venus. She said she'd love to come play it. And then Danny Collins, who is, you know, top American player, finalist at the Australian Open last year, she committed. Yep. So we're looking forward to that. The one thing is we were waiting a little bit though on Venus because she pulled out of Australia with a hamstring injury. So we're just making sure she's good to go. We haven't heard back yet, but you know, look, the idea is to make sure that we have a great field for the ladies, and also the key part to this, which for this podcast works well too, is those two ladies, those two pros, are going to also play a set of doubles with the SMU women's team. So we'll play a two out of three tiebreaker for the third, and then two of the girls. Hadley's going to be out there, and our other young player from SMU will be playing a double set with them. So we're going to have a great time with them. So they get to experience singles and doubles.
That's awesome. Yeah, and speaking of doubles, it turned out you had quite the doubles field last year as well. So Marcelo Arevalo and JJ Roger won the tournament, went on to win the French Correct. Open. They're the three seed at the Australian Open, which is going on right now. You had Lloyd Glasspool and Harry Hillyavara, who also made the year-end final and turned out to be a top team. They're the sixth seed at the Australian Open, I believe. And then John Isner and Jack Sock teamed up and won Indian Wells. And Isner went on a doubles tear after the Dallas Open. Who can we expect to see this year as far as the doubles players go?
Well, you also left out one other player. We actually had five players that played our doubles at Dallas that qualified for Turin. Austin Krajicek, plays with Ivan Dodig, actually also qualified. So we had five of our players out of the 16 guys played Dallas last year. So I'm going to say Dallas is a great buoying point for all of the doubles teams. The doubles entry comes out next week. So we don't have it officially, but I expect all of those guys to be back. Austin, I know, is coming back as well. Philip Farmer, who coaches a lot of those guys, the American guys, he's been telling me that he's trying to get all of those top doubles guys to come in here for two reasons. One, we want to see the great doubles matches, and the players love to come here in Dallas already after year one. So, you know, I expect all of them, you know, Julian, he's been coming and playing events for me for nearly 25 years now. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I was able to pull up an old picture of when he won Memphis back in the day, 20 years ago. So the doubles field will be fantastic again. Jack Sock is coming to play. He's a wild card into our singles event. He's actually going to be in market coming up here in a couple of days. So, you know, he's going to be wanting to play some doubles, I'm sure. I don't know who he wants to play with yet. We'll chat about that in a couple of days and see what he does. But he'll be playing with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd imagine Isner will play again as well, assuming he's relatively healthy.
Exactly. I mean, look, we have two wild cards that we give out. And obviously, if you've got a player like John and Jack say, hey, can we get a wild card? I'll be like, no problem. But this year, both of them they'll get in on their own ranking. They don't need to need a wild card because John has, you know, won, what, 2 1,000 tournaments in the semis of another. John, doubles player, isn't it? You know?
No kidding.
About his game. I think you and I had a few, you know, messages during the year when we were watching some of those matches. And John just understands how to play smart doubles, you know. Obviously, big serve, hit the return cross court, play percentage tennis, and it's hard to beat, you know, and hard to break his serve.
Yeah, he covers over half of the court up there at the net as well. Definitely a tough player. So what should we expect this year as fans? Or I guess let me rephrase that. What's going to be different from a fan's perspective this year from last year? So last year you had the stadium, you had the kind of grandstand court behind there, and then the concessions with the two practice courts that I absolutely loved because I could sit there and watch doubles practice from right behind the baseline, which is exactly where I want to be watching it from. So what can we expect different from year one to year two?
Couple of things apart from the women's event, we'll also be having Hawkeye Live. So there will be no line people out there. Everything will be done, electronically. And I think we could even get you to record the ins and outs. If we wanted to have your voice on there, Hawkeye Live, we have some options on that. What we're doing this year, we're actually moving our, concession area and the practice courts to behind the building. There's a grassed area back there. And working with SMU, they've asked us to sort of work together and put it back in that area to be a better experience. And so we will again have the practice courts out there, and the hospitality mm-hmm. village will have a separate area for the box holders. So they'll have their own lounge to go into each day. So okay. a more elevated experience, as well as on the food side of things, we're adding a local restaurant, Mi Casino, which is a terrific restaurant here in town. Well known, absolutely. And then, so they're going to be complementing our food from last year. So we're going to raise that food as well. And then we're having a signature drink. And the signature drink will be the Mumbo Taxi from Mi Casino. So everybody in Dallas knows the Mumbo Taxi. So I think we've got a lot of interesting and fun things for the fans to see this year. So trying to improve it year over year.
Cool. That's awesome. I look forward to that. What from last year, so you're going into, let's say a year ago from now when we're on this podcast, you're going into year one. What after the tournament ended up going better than you expected?
Look, I think the attendance from the fans in the regular daytime session, Vasek Pospisil said to me, look, you had me scheduled for a daytime match, and I thought, okay, I'll be playing in a in a cave. And he said it was kind of great that there were that many people there. So I think truly from the fans just supporting it and being there more than just on the premium matches. Like right now, there's very few tickets left on our last four sessions because people want to see the final. But I think that's one of the biggest things we were very happy and surprised about. Not that we, I shouldn't say, I don't know if we expected it either way. We just weren't sure coming to a new market as to how it would be. I think the reception from reception from the players is great, as well as their feedback saying they love playing in that intimate atmosphere. They enjoyed that a lot. We weren't quite sure if, a little bit smaller stadium, whether they liked that or not, but the players did. And then the fans, by showing up was tremendous support for the event. And at the end of the year, I think the how we showcased the SMU tennis facility, the Alltech Star Slinger community was excited to see how good of a tennis center they really do have at SMU and showcased SMU and the facility. So I think those things were really, really good for us. And now the corporate support is picking up, because last year it was a little bit of close your eyes and imagine how it will look. And everybody's like, well, I don't see the same thing you see, Peter, which was to be said. But a couple of people, when they walked in, they said, wow, I didn't know the building could look like this. I think that was tremendous for us, and we're getting more corporate support as well. So I think those are the things we weren't sure was going to happen and turned out to be great.
What did you learn last year that you feel like you want to improve upon this year, or adjustments that need to be made?
That's part of the food, is to give more options for the fans. Mm-hmm. That's one of them. One of our things, parking is tough. There's just not a lot of parking.
That is tough. Yeah.
We've come up with, again, working with SMU and the city, we're actually changing our entrance. So instead of being on the front of the campus, it's going to be on the backside. So I have a large marquee there. We're able to block off part of the street. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a little bit more of a runway. And we're doing the golf style of parking this year for those VIP ticket holders. And that 1 mile away, we have a large lot that we can put everybody in and just bring them over. So it's a mile in a bus. And that way, at the end of the night, because that was our biggest challenge, when, 300 people all leave at the same time, it's like, there's no way you can get 300 people. So we're going to that model this year, which I think will be a lot better for everybody on that.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I want to ask you a couple strategy questions, but anything else you want to mention on the tournament? I know people can go to DallasOpen.com to learn more, to buy tickets. I think they can volunteer if there's still volunteer spots available.
We'd love to have some volunteers. The area that we need to volunteer the most in is transportation. So you would be getting to pick up the players and take them around when they're here in town. Always could have some more volunteers. The ball kids are all filled, though. We've got more ball kids than we can handle, which is great. So we're
so I can't apply. You can't make an exception for me.
You know, your experience might get you across.
You know my skill set there.
Exactly, but look, volunteers would be great, and obviously buying some tickets and coming out and supporting the players. I mean, this is a Dallas event that goes to 100 countries around the world. We want to see as many Dallas people out there cheering for Dallas as well as for the players and all of it, and the SMU side of things as well. Showcase all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Volunteering is a great way to kind of get a little bit of access. Yeah, I had some friends who did that for the WTA finals here, and they said it was an amazing experience because you get kind of one-on-one connections with a lot of the players. So it's really cool.
Absolutely, you do. And, you know, that the WTA finals, they were using our stadium court, and their player benches were our Dallas Open player benches. All of us in the tennis world helped each other out there. So it'll look a different color. It'll look a different color, obviously, back to our colors. But it was one of our courts out there.
Yeah, there you go. Cool. So everyone go to dallasopen.com to learn more about the tournament and definitely attend that. Now, Peter, let's dive into a little bit of strategy. So I want to talk about Catherine Harrison, who is in the Australian Open. I think she plays tomorrow. But before we get to that, last year we were sitting at TCU and we were watching a doubles match. And I think we talked about this on the podcast last time, and I've definitely mentioned it. So anybody listening is probably going to hear this story for the sixth time. But this girl misses this inside out volley from the ad court. It's a backhand, and she's trying to hit it kind of to her left. And you asked me what she did wrong, and I came up with something, and it was incorrect. And you said, no, she just needs to hit that across her body to the right behind the returner. Now, fast forward to 2023, and it's totally changed the way I volley on the tennis court. I'm hitting almost every volley. I'm hitting almost every volley across my body now, especially any volley that's kind of inside on me, like kind of into my body. And it just makes it so much easier. So I want you to just elaborate on that and talk a little bit about how you think about where to hit your volleys.
Look, the volley is an offensive shot. That's the theory behind it. But you've got to understand, when you're not in an offensive position, it's like people think, okay, I'm at the net, I have to put it away. If you've got a tough ball at your right hip, or you've got that ball that's high on that backhand side in there, even though you see an opening down the middle of the court, that's just a very hard shot to hit. And so what you've got to do is, you already have the offensive position at the net. So it's okay to hit another volley, cross your body, get it deep, get it solid. They can't hurt you, and just wait for that ball. Be a little more patient. Look, Mike and Bob Bryan were the greatest at this. They weren't hitting winners off their first volley. You see many rallies where they'll hit two or three volleys and be patient enough and confident enough in their volley to say, okay, I'll wait for the right ball. You know, anything above their shoulder, they're definitely not changing direction, because that's just physically difficult shot to do. So that's sort of the mentality that I try and teach and have my players do. Be patient. You're already in the offensive position. You don't have to hit the winner off the first ball. That's that shot we saw is that player going, oh my gosh, I've got a high ball, which, you know, oh, high ball should put away, but high inside out backhand volley, you know, the way I always say, if it takes you that long to describe the shot, then it's obviously not an easy shot, you know?
Right.
And so she was seeing that aspect and saying, I want to win the point. And I'm like, uh-oh, good ball from my opponent, difficult. I'll stay in the offensive position and then I'll do it on the next one. It's almost like a, you know, like a running back. You get your 3-4 yards on the first play. You just do a little bit of grinding, and you wait for the hole to open up, and then, you know, score the touchdown. Well, same thing here. Hit the volley back, keep them on the defensive, and then wait for when you can hit the winner, equivalent of the touchdown. The patience, it's something that doubles players, good doubles players, understand, and those that are aspiring to that tend to rush on.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That's really good advice. So I want to talk about Catherine Harrison. She is, what's her ranking right now? Top 100?
Oh, yeah, she's in the 70s in the doubles, I think.
60s, 70s, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So she you've worked with her since she was a kid. And she is
many years
in the 70s, on the WTA tour in doubles. She had a good year last year. She actually won a singles match at Wimbledon and got a little bit screwed over by the whole points thing.
don't bring up the Catherine unless you want to hear a long one. Yeah. I was okay. Lucky enough. She asked me to come over for that. She said, I'm about to make qualies and I need a coach. And I said, well, look, you and I haven't worked together for 4 or 5 months, you know, one-on-one. I said, I don't know what I can do. She goes, I don't care. I want you to come over here. And so she qualified. I didn't know I was going to be at Wimbledon that long, but I was there. She, three qualies in a main draw match and also won a main draw doubles match. She qualied at the US Open as well and also won a doubles match there. So
what did her off season look like for this past year? What were things, if you can give any specific insights into what she was working on, what she was trying to improve?
Number one is getting herself healthy. She's been working. She had a foot injury in college, and it's always maintenance on that. So that was one of the things. And then second of all is getting strength. Sitting there at the slams and watching some of these players with their warm-up exercises, it was like, okay, that's what the top 10 players are doing. So a lot of work on her physicality. And then from her own game standpoint, working on serving and understanding, her first serve percentage, and not necessarily, which sounds interesting, not necessarily trying to get your first serve percentage up to 80%, but getting you to winning more first serves. So I was working on the second shot a lot to be able to, because quite often she would serve really well. They'd play a hard shot down the middle and, similar to the volley, lose control, like, uh-oh, I've got to do something great. And and so she's working on that first shot from that aspect as well. So a lot of, the percentage things you can control, is what we were focused on. And she did a great job on that. And when she got to Australia, she's been down there and been playing some good tennis. Had a couple of upsets already in doubles. Beat the number one seed in Auckland first round. Beat the number two seed in the second round in Canberra. And they drew the number one. World number ones in the first round at the Aussie Open, Krejcikova and that. So, good opportunity. You know, if you're going to beat the top seeds, playing them early is better than playing them late when they've played into form. So,
yeah, I think so as well. What's something that she is significantly better at now than she was, let's say, 2 years ago?
She's better at a shot tolerance and understanding when to go for it. She used to probably pull the trigger a little too early because she's a very offensive player, understands that she can wait a little bit more, doesn't mind to hit two or three more balls, I think. So that has improved tremendously. And honestly, her serve has always been a very good part of her game, but she's using it much, much more effectively now, understanding when to hit the out wide serve, setting her opponents up much better. So her serve has improved tremendously in the effectiveness of it. And you can see it really in her second serve points won more than anything else. That percentage, when her and I talk after matches, it's about those kinds of things. Was the percentage where you wanted to be in terms of winning points, not just, okay, I got 70% of first serves in, but I only won 10% of the points. That's of no value. So that's where she's really improved a lot.
Okay. And how are you tracking, what are you using to track the data as far as the serve percentage and win percentage?
That's really just that comes with, the matches online with the WTA and the ITF. Yeah. They, those things come out like that where you can see that. The only challenge about any of that data, unless I'm sitting there, is what they consider, an unforced error or forced error can be different, and that's always a little bit, they're fairly similar. When I was at Wimbledon, I was actually walking around. I just watched the people who are doing it, and it was just a human who's sitting there and just deciding, oh, that's unforced and that's forced.
Yeah.
100-mile-an-hour ball straight at you is pretty tough. That, in my opinion, is almost a forced error versus a, 50-mile-an-hour ball three steps away, to me, is unforced. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of that, but it's been pretty accurate. She was able to get the Hawkeye data from her matches at the US Open and Wimbledon, which is really helpful in terms of depth of the ball, placement of the serve, and it showed a couple times, we thought we're serving more to this target and you're actually not serving as much of that target, so we need to to mix it up a little bit.
You don't
want to get lost in the analytics, but you need to have it there to understand what you're doing more effectively.
It can always kind of confirm existing theories or surprise you. That's funny about the unforced error thing. So I haven't heard what happened, but I was chatting in December with Craig O'Shaughnessy, and he was telling he was working on this presentation to go speak, I think, in Germany, and it was like a week or two ago. And he showed me some of these videos that he had pulled from the US Open, and it was, they all ended in errors, and they were either forced error or unforced error. And he was speaking to 1,000 coaches, and he told me he was going to have them all stand up and raise their hand if it's a forced error or an unforced error. And then if you get it wrong, you sit down. And he said after like four, he expected after like 4 or 5 points, every single one of the 1,000 would be sitting down, because it is just a human who's just labeling it forced and unforced. And some of the points are just like, you're trying to hit from the corner a backhand that looks routine, but you look at the other side of the net and Nadal just hit a forehand. And it's like, what about that is not forced? So
exactly. That's, you know, look, Craig is spot on. He's, you know, one of the you know, leaders in this area of the analysis of that thing. And that's, you know, I think it's a combination. Even I'll go as far as say, depending on the player, you know, somebody like a Rafa, for him, an unforced error is different to somebody like maybe a Roger, who's more offensive, you know? So again, it's even a player as well as, you know, who hit it, how hard it is and those things. So I would like to have been in that room. That would have been fun just to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to hear what he has to say about it afterwards. So back to Catherine, they drew the Czechs in the first round, which is, you know, that's brutal. What do you tell her going into a match like that? I mean, it's obviously by far, in my mind anyways, the best doubles team in the world. What do you say as a coach going into a match like that to her?
Number one is let them beat you. In other words, you don't have to be the greatest thing since sliced bread to beat them. Make them show you they hit a better angle than you. They hit a better serve than you. What tends to happen is you play the good players and you think you've got to do something outrageously good to beat them. You really don't. Play your game. And if they pass you 20 times and hit 10 aces, okay. They proved why they're the number one team in the world. So number one is don't force the issue. Second of all, just from them, you know, look, you and I watched, I think we watched both of them down in Fort Worth. And I said to Catherine, I said, you're going to have to be ready for some lobs. They're going to be, they use the lobs very well. To get their opponents off the net. I think Krejcikova is the one that actually hits a heck of a topspin lob off a ball that looks like it's kind of hard to hit a topspin lob off of. And if you look at it, there's about 3 or 4 teams on the ladies' side that hit lobs consistently that are effective. And then the rest of them tend to be, you know, grip it and rip it, which honestly is, I think, how the Czechs are the number ones. They understand when to, the nuance of when to change it. So, make them prove they're better than you, be ready for their tendencies. And that's sort of the best thing. You go out there and play. Again, as a coach, what I will always tell an opponent, a student is to focus on things you can control. You can control your returns made, your service percentage, your shot tolerance to a certain extent. Don't worry about their winners and things like that. I want you to come off the court and say, yes, I made all my second serve returns. That's great. You might have lost every point. But if that was your goal when you did it, that's how we focus on the process of getting better. The process is where the focus needs to be, not winning and losing. That gets taken care of if you improve on the process. So especially playing, you know, the number one team in the world, if you focus solely on winning and losing, the chance of playing well is not good.
So. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I noticed at the WTA finals last year, Krejcikova, especially on that backhand return or the backhand ground stroke, she can hold it to the last second and hit that topspin lob that you're talking about. And it's, I mean, it just makes your knees buckle when you watch it. You just can't do anything.
You can't do anything. I mean, it's sort of like, again, as we talk about, you're saying, okay, this ball, the later she goes, the more it's going to get sort of down the line because she can't pull it. And then all of a sudden she pulls the lob off and it's like, break your ankle type thing like they're doing a basketball court.
Yeah, it is. And it's, I was speaking with a coach there who I was doing some analytics work with, and he said, this is one of the things that the analytics just can't show, but the players have given feedback to him that that's the thing Krejcikova is so good at on both sides. She just holds it to the last second and can change direction and go down the line. So it makes it so difficult to poach on. But anyways, yeah, we can talk about them for a while. They're such a good doubles team.
But you know what? I think if you walked off the court after playing them, they don't blow you off the court. They beat you with smart, intelligent, high percentage doubles. They're not they're not hitting a million winners in, like at 100 miles an hour. It's like, okay, we play percentages and throw in those couple of nuances. So it's what they're deceptively good is how I like to say that.
Right. Yeah, they force you into a lot of discomfort and a lot of errors and playing on their terms, really. Okay, so last question for you. And this is a bit of a selfish one, but I think the listeners will get some value out of this. I am working I'm working on an ebook on return strategy. So I wanted to hear from you your best piece of advice for return strategy in doubles.
Return strategy in doubles. Look, I think the number one thing is to pick your target and commit to your target. You know, again, you've seen their tendencies and not try to overthink. Are they moving? Are they poaching? Are they staying still? Pick your target and hit to it. You'll make better returns. And, you know, you don't have to keep going to the same target. There's times to rip down the line. But I think that's the consistency aspect. Pick your target and commit to it. That's, to me, the basis for it. I mean, if you took a look at the good teams, they're sort of signaling on the returns and that, but they're choosing the targets where their partner's going to go. But I think that's the most important thing, choose it and commit to it. That's my starting one. You sort of asked me a little bit. I wasn't quite sure where we were going on that, but that's number one. And then the other part is, if I was to keep going, it's just you got to have a lob return. You've got to have that as a part of the arsenal. As I say, commit to what you're doing. One of the things you've got to have is a lob return. It doesn't have to be a topspin. I mean, at my level, all you have to do is somebody hits a lob that's going to land within a foot of the baseline and I'm in trouble. So, you know, that's the other part. People need to incorporate that more, and especially at the amateur level. I mean, nobody has these great overheads. They're putting them away every time. Right. I know everybody hates to see someone who lobs or pushes, whatever. Hey, if they beat you, they're good, you know. So pick your target and add the lob to your repertoire.
I totally agree. That's a very, very good tool for the toolkit. Awesome. Well, Peter, thanks again for hopping on. Any last requests of the audience before we let you go here?
No, I think just come out and see us at the Dallas Open. And, you know, Hadley and Jackie, come out and see them play in the women's match. That'll be great for them to have some local support, and hopefully they'll learn a lot.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Peter. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I will talk to you all next week. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.